Welcome back to the Last Lap podcast, everyone. Welcome to our beautiful $1 billion studio.
Yes, maybe. Confirmed.
Do you reckon? Confirmed. Do you reckon?
I think we're looking at least $4 billion, to be honest with you.
Oh, I mean, inflation's a bit mad.
Facts. I've crunched the numbers as well. And yeah, it's four.
How doing, Aaron?
Up to five, as I just said that.
Yeah, yeah, good to see you, mate.
Yeah, yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I'm doing well. I'm missing the Formula One right now, but we're here. We're here to talk anyway. We've got the next live show coming soon as well. So
yeah, Austria's here soon enough.
Yeah. We'll be talking about that today. But yeah, no, blessed man. How's things with you?
Good. I'm all right. I'm struggling in the heat. I'm not going to lie.
It's
a bit cooler today. So I'm.
You're not built for the heat. Is that what
I'm
you're saying?
I'm not built for the heat.
He's not built for the smoke.
My hands just get so sweaty.
It's quite
disgusting.
Yeah. No. Honestly, I feel like all the flats these days as well in London. Yeah. People don't realize this. They trap the heat in. So when it's hot, it might be hot outside. It's like an oven inside.
Didn't you say your AC's gone?
Yeah, it's fucked. It's like 47 degrees right now in my flat at this moment in time. So,
well, fortunately, we've got a guest that will cool things down because he's the coolest guy.
Oh,
I
nice.
Know. Tobin Lee, welcome to the Last Lap.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. That was very, very dramatic. I'm not really that cool, I think.
No, that was a smooth transition. I liked it.
Yeah.
Well, because you could act as my aircon, that'd be great.
Yeah, I've had to buy an aircon a few days ago, so clearly something's going
wrong.
What's
nice is because we have actually worked together before this in a previous capacity, and I don't know where it came from. Whenever I see you, I'd be like, oh, it's Tobin Lee.
Yeah.
I think it's because, Tobin, you are a former... Am I right in saying Forza Motorsport World Champion?
Well, kind of. If I stretch the truth slightly,
go on.
Most of the time stretch I would. Come, yeah, most of the time I'd come second.
Okay.
Unfortunately, like repetitively, I'd be second.
To the same person.
Yeah, there was a guy called Lege, and Lege was incredible and would always...
Do you hate him?
So, I don't hate him, no. I have a lot of respect. Yeah.
Beef between them. Okay, no,
okay. Tobin, thank you so much for coming. Obviously, as a ex-esports top-tier driver, but what is it you do now that's relevant, particularly to kind of modern motorsport in real life, right? Because esports and the real thing, the convergence is coming, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, kind of the way I think of it is I feel like I was very lucky to like be there at the start and get all this driving experience in esports, because bear in mind I was like 16 when I was, you know, a professional, you know, barely old enough to, well, I couldn't drive and yet I was doing it. And for me, like as I like went through my career, I had this background in gaming, and then I went through and got into management because I've always been very interested in business and opportunity. And now I'm trying to path a career in like unlocking the opportunity of esports and what that provides for, you know, other industries, whether that be, you know, any other kind of business outside of esports, and bringing gaming and this modern culture to them, and also to sport, because there's a lot of stuff there. So I've now got a business called Pace Note, which is all about kind of unlocking that opportunity, and started it at the start of this year. So properly in the like in the grind, like just kind of getting stuff going. But it's very good fun.
Yeah. And what was your driving test like? Were you like, did you feel well prepared for it after years of racing?
Scurrying around corners, just like drifting around.
It's like, where's the pad? Yeah. Well, my driving test, I was bottling it. I was way more nervous for that than like competing on like a stage, like in front of cameras. Yeah, but I did pass first time. So lots of other... esport people don't. So I was very, very.
Have you taken lessons yet?
I've never taken a driving lesson in my life, apart from the one in the quadrant video.
Oh, in the KA.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite an intense one as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I can say in my life that my first driving lesson I ever had, I had Lando Norris sat on my lap at one point during it.
But you'd take that to the grave, mate.
Yeah, I think that's
on the headstone.
That's bio worthy. You know what I mean?
LinkedIn bio worthy. Well, so Tobin, just to give everyone listening an idea. So when you jumped into team management, what's the kind of, who have you worked with up to kind of most recently from where you started?
Yeah. Well, so I started and I was representing a couple of teams. And actually, when I was 18, a company called Veloce, who I think we all know, they just started and got involved in the gaming and esports space. And they launched a Forza team. And basically, they picked me up as a young like 18-year-old lad right at the start of their business. And I was there for like good half year to a year just competing in the early days. And then I went away and I was kind of dotting about, just kind of chasing the dream or whatever at other teams. And then I got a degree. And then once I got a degree in business management, I was like, right, this is it now. It's time to make the jump.
I'm a serious geezer now.
I'm a serious man.
And then that was when I actually re-approached Jamie at Veloce and told him that, you know, ultimately I wanted to get involved. And basically I got like my first experience there in management. So I'd gone from this driver to suddenly I was put in the manager's seat, the manager's chair, actually, if I'm a bit more official. And then from there, I was working with McLaren. So I got pretty good start out of uni. And I was working with McLaren, looking after their esports stuff on behalf of Veloce. And, it genuinely couldn't have been much better to pop out from there. And then, obviously, Niren, you know, I was working with Quadrant a fair amount as well, which was amazing experience too. And then now, like at the start of this year, I got very hungry because last year, McLaren, the team I was running, we won the F1 Esports Series with Lucas Blakely and Barry Boromond and the rest of the team. And the amount of experience I gained, especially from that season, because when you win something, what I learned is that when you win, it's just a reflection of how many times I messed up before, because I'd done many seasons and I'd done wrong things many times. But then last year, like, got it right. And that was sick. Like, it was really cool.
Yeah.
And then, you know, now I'm just trying to bring that to a wider kind of, you know, do my thing now, because I just always wanted to. So, That's very condensed, but hopefully that kind of gives some insight.
What were they? I've met Lucas before. What were them two like? Him and Barry to kind of work with. And what is the skill set that you need to be a really good team manager in esports? I guess, to start with.
Well, the number one thing you do actually as any kind of manager, but like whether you're in esports or whatever, you're primarily like you have to be a people person. And like literally the job is genuinely like you're just having to speak to people, get to know them. You have to be their friend. And if you're not like, if you don't genuinely get on with them, you're not going to be a good manager, because you have to like understand like what people are going through. And you know, Lucas and Barry, the drivers, on the face of it, those are exactly who you'd normally ask about. And to cut to the chase, they're all legends. Yeah. They're really easy to get on with. Nice guys. They're really working hard. And you know, it's great, but then it's easy to overlook the fact that actually like behind them, you've got like development drivers, which are typically like younger esports people that are wanting to help and contribute, but they're not quite at the level themselves to like compete on the world stage. So you have to look after these people and managing their expectations and keeping them hungry and willing to help, but not like burning their like desire to be there and get jealous, because that could happen. I would be jealous if I was a development driver. And then you've also got people that aren't driving, but more like people wanting to pursue more professional, well, I say more professional, but more like kind of logistical roles like management.
Or traditional roles.
Traditional roles, exactly. And you've got people that want to become managers themselves, whether that's like kind of, we call it engineers in esports. And it very much is an engineering role where you look at data and stuff, but it's also a like, because it's esports and it's newer, people have to do a lot more. Mm-hmm. And so they're typically looking after people themselves and giving people pointers on, you know, how they're doing their job, and then also looking after them as people. You know, there's a lot to it. And I don't think a lot of people really understand, but soon I think they will. And hopefully even being here is testament to that. So there's a lot going on.
Well, how close is it to your equivalent at, say, the equivalent position at the McLaren Formula One team versus your position last year as team manager for the McLaren esports team? But how similar are those roles?
Well, obviously I'm much more qualified to talk about the esports side than make too many presumptions about what it's like on the F1 team. But I think when I was working with McLaren last year, the best example of that was we brought in, new to last year, one of the F1 engineers that's working on the race strategy last year. He's actually since gone up in the ranks, and I'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a bit. But a guy called George Simmons, really good mate of mine now, and he was I put him as the head of engineering, so head of kind of data and strategy at McLaren Shadow, their esports team. And to be honest, I think from having George there, who was an engineer and from the F1 team, to come into esports, it really like shone a light on actually they're very similar. Like they're very similar. And in many ways, it's like the esports team is, even though it's virtual and yes, it's a game or whatever, it's like a really good kind of training ground, if you like, you know, to actually prepare for real life motorsport. And the same also can be said, this is slightly off topic, but the same is said for driving, because obviously like Lucas Blakely is phenomenal in a car and then he go phenomenal on a sim and then he goes in real life and he goes and beats Sebastian Vettel, Valtteri Bottas and all the others in the Race of Champions. So there's a lot of crossover like on all kind of sides of it. And you never know, maybe esports could become more of a recognized kind of proving ground for this stuff.
I was actually going to ask that, because like from the driver perspective, because like you said, at Race Champions, Lucas Blakely, I think, surprised pretty much everyone by beating really, really established F1 names like Seb and like Valtteri. Obviously, we've had a couple esports drivers go into the real life equivalent, like Chem going off. He's in Super Formula now, or the equivalent of.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah,
Paul Fraga. Jan Mardenborough, who's getting his own movie.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. Are there any drivers currently on the grid that you've worked with that you think will make the crossover like they did?
Well, it's interesting. So last week, Tom and I were at a karting event, and actually on one of the teams I was with was Jan Mardenborough. Mm-hmm. I've never met him before, and kind of loosely meeting him and thinking about his story, it's amazing to me with like he's obviously hugely talented, and so many of these drivers are, but I think it's people like Jan and Igor and everyone else that's made it full time. They've managed to like acquire like a kind of behind the scenes financial element to it, or sponsorship or backing. And I think that ironically, there's like loads of people that I think could make it in real motorsport. Like James Baldwin is a prime example, you know, of he's massively fast. He's even proved himself. But yeah, like you need that financial backing behind the scenes. Otherwise nothing can happen.
Yeah.
So it's a big topic for debate, but I think basically, the challenge, and I think James is the best current example. Mm. It's a case of once you've got very good speed, it's then a case of, you know, hold that in that pocket and now focus on all efforts and getting sponsorship. But that's really, really hard.
Yeah.
So it's even more testament to those that have made it. Yeah. So I'm
trying to think how, like, you know, gaming is so monetizable, right? There's a clear way of, it's not just, you know, you're not just being monetized at the point of purchasing the game, whether it's the F1 game, whether it's a set of course or whatever it is, right? Whether it's hardcore sim or more casual. And then there's so many mechanics built into video games now. Obviously, FIFA is like a prime example, and the amount of money that generates. Gaming's a very profitable industry. Motorsport is the polar opposite. Motorsport is reliant, so much of motorsport is reliant on just rich people who just love it and just inject money into it and don't really see a return of investment. It's very, you know, F1 is getting closer to profitability with these teams, but even then that's reliant on prize money, which is reliant on eyeballs. Do you think that, you know, having these two worlds come together will almost make the future of motorsport and what we see, you know, F1 drivers in the future, real life drivers, a bit more equitable, because you can hone your skills on the simulator, you can, and maybe the games could, you know, whether it's the F1 game, whether it's, you know, top tier sims like iRacing and Set of Course, could do, I guess, more to get, you know, because they're so close, they're so closely linked, the sim and the real thing. So do you think that's, again, I suppose it's, we want it to be more of a meritocracy, real life motorsport, and esports kind of is much more of a meritocracy, isn't it?
Yeah. Funnily enough, when I was on the way to the karting last week that we saw each other at, Tom, one of the, I was driving there with one of the young, with a young lad who I'm actually, he's part of a team that I'm working with through my business at the moment. And he made a really interesting point that he had been told, because he's actually a racing driver, but he does sim racing. And he says, some wise man, I can't actually remember who told it, but it was, that by doing sim racing, you can make money. And then by doing real racing, you just lose
spend money.
Yeah, you just spend money. And it's like, actually, like when you just rip apart all the kind of like different things of thinking about it, it's like, actually, it's probably just as simple as that. It's just, if you're part of sim racing, you know, there is a job there, but then real racing there isn't. And maybe, you know, I'm not really too sure what to think of that, to be honest. I think that it's just reflective of what the industries are like. But, you know, on the plus side, perhaps that's actually a huge like core opportunity of esports there, in that like,
I think it is. Yeah. I'm not quite sure how, but I feel like it makes sense that there's something there. Mm-hmm. I think there's, I mean, you've got that, is it the Fanatec GT World Challenge where they have, is it half the season's real racing and half of it's sim?
I do.
Something along those lines.
Yeah, I think it's when they have a race weekend, they'll do a race, but then there will be a portion of points available to a sim race that actually contribute to the big championship. So if you're a sick sim racer, then you're actually going to be like better off.
It's
quite cool, actually. It's quite innovative.
You'll be a backmarker in all the real races. As long as you get on the sim, you'll pick up and and not finish last.
Imagine winning the championship and you're an incredible like kind of, you know, sim racer. I don't want to say anything too wrong, but then you get in a car, you've got no idea. Yeah.
But I think, you know, have you seen the validity of sim racing be accepted more and more throughout, you know, your career? Because I mean, you're not an old lad, right? You're much younger definitely younger than me.
Yeah,
pretty sure you're younger than
me as well. Yeah,
I'm 22. I'm 22.
Oh Jesus Christ!
Yeah,
he's a child.
But over that time, you know, have you seen it change the perception? I guess, and you know, now the F1 teams, you know, you work for McLaren, these F1 teams are buying into it now. You know, Williams are putting a lot into their mm-hmm. esports organization. You know, a lot of these F1 teams now are really, you know, pushing that, and I guess they understand that if they want to be relevant to the youngest generation now, then esports is the easiest way to kind of capture you early doors.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, it's like when I started 6 years ago, like, yes, I'm very young, but I think I've been in the space a long time, and that's my advantage. And then it's but when I started, I was actually too embarrassed. I was genuinely too embarrassed to tell anyone that I was part of gaming, because back even 6 years ago, it wasn't like esports, or if it was, then you'd just be like a nerd. Mm. That would be like it. And so, yeah, definitely. Like when I first started, wouldn't even tell anyone. It all changed actually when my school, right? When I was, because, you know, I was young, I was coming to the end of my end of sixth form. And when they found out that I was going to the 24 hours of Le Mans to compete in an esports event, they're like, okay, maybe this isn't like nerdy.
Like, you're like, or something.
It's like, actually, yeah. And then, you know, they found out that as a young lad, I was getting money for it. And then they're like, okay, really? Like,
he's earning money through playing video games?
Yeah. Like, what?
Oh, God.
And then
it's like Christmas.
Yeah.
It's like when their family come over for Christmas.
How'd you earn money?
but when they found, well, I'm not saying it was when they found out that I made money, but when they found out that it was serious.
Probably played a part.
Probably, yeah. They did, like, you know, they made me, and this is why I think I find it easier talking about gaming afterwards, because when I was at the peak of my, like, being a bit embarrassed, they went and were like, let's over and do a whole school assembly talking about esports and gaming to the whole school. Bear in mind, these are like young people, exactly the kind of people that would take the mick, and I would see them every day. So if they hated it, I'd be against the wall, like being egged.
Yeah.
But I did it, and you know, I risked everything, you know, if I was going to clickbait what I'm talking about, risked everything. and they all, you know, I think from that moment, people were like, oh, actually, it's pretty cool. And then I've noticed since around that year when I did it, more generally, like, people are like, oh, that's actually, like, you know, you can do well. So fair play.
Wavy. Exciting, man. So what is the, obviously, you've set up PaceNow Agency, started this year. What's the kind of, what's the future holding? And I guess, what are you, is there anything you're working on at the minute that you can talk about?
Yeah. So basically, at the moment, I'm just trying to build a company of people. I think the big part is that, so I started it on my own as a solo founder. Now, to anyone watching that's done, you know, their own businesses and whatever, being solo is difficult because you have to just bounce everything off yourself. Mm-hmm. And so at the start of this year, I've just been building up the people around in the business to help facilitate the goal, which is essentially create a business where it's really easy for any brand or business to just come to us and say, look, we want an esports team. Paste note, you can do it for us, right? And then we can. Or you want a tournament in our name. We've got a couple clients that we're working on at the moment that, especially like student companies, well up for, you know, hosting a tournament in like Rocket League or something. It doesn't have to be sim racing. It's more like esports and gaming as a whole. And there's a huge opportunity for like doing a gaming event, doing it well, because no one knows how to do it well, frankly. Well, people do, but it's very hard to find those people if you're not like in the space.
Yeah.
And so we want to make it accessible and say, you know, just what do you want? This, 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 and this, pay a fee, and then it's done and you don't have to think about it. Mm. That's the goal. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's going really well so far. I mean, it's growing. Like, I've got others around me now. That helps. yeah, I mean, I started it in February. So it's really not been long at all. It's been like 4 months, but I've managed to, you know, sustain myself, keep it growing, keep momentum going, and got some really exciting stuff coming up. So it's very good.
Good stuff, man. Good to see it. Well, look, at the end of the day, like, I think, like I said, the teams are starting to invest in this more. And talking of investment
in teams, like that.
In teams, which we might be seeing, because, you know, the people investing seem to have their finger on the pulse in terms of youth popular culture. And what's going on at Alpine, Aaron?
Well,
news drop yesterday.
Oh, Mr. Deadpool himself, the young Ryan Reynolds, has invested. Is it 24% or something like that? Basically,
yeah. So he's part of a group that's invested 24%.
Yeah. Into
purchased 24% of the Alpine F1 team, excluding the engine division. Just the just Enstone.
That team. Just the peen.
Just the peen. Actually, because I was going through yesterday, it's their company's called Maximum Effort, which I didn't realize was a Deadpool reference.
Right. Yeah.
Apparently, Maximum Effort, but that's the name of their like holding company or investment company that him and Rob McElhenney like invest in. But yeah, there's a few others. There's Michael B. Jordan is also part of that group of investors.
Oh, really?
He's an actor.
Yeah.
There's other, what is it? Redbird Capital, Otro Capital. I mean, these are like invested in Liverpool and the Boston Red Sox and AC Milan. So this is big. Like, I think this is pretty significant, right? Because you look at, obviously, Ryan and Rob are the ones who've generated the headlines because of everything they've done with Wrexham.
Yeah.
And do you think that there's an opportunity, because we've seen the Netflix effect, how that's worked for the sport more generally. You know, these people coming in and investing, not taking over Alpine by any stretch. It's quite different to Wrexham in that regard, because they did purchase Wrexham kind of fully.
Yeah.
But their influence, their contacts, you know, I think it could be a really exciting time for Alpine moving forward. And in terms of generating that content, like, again, football, that's tried and tested, not just with Wrexham, but All or Nothing and all those series around all these different clubs. Like, feels like Alpine, I think this is a fantastic move from them personally.
I think it's a sign as well of like the growing that mainstream popularity of Formula One again as well. Obviously, Ryan Reynolds, you know, them buying Wrexham, fine. Football's been established as a number one sport in this country for years, decades, whatever. But globally, like a Hollywood star like Ryan Reynolds investing into a Formula One team like Alpine as well is wavy. I'm not gonna lie. Imagine saying that like 10 years ago.
It legitimizes
when Bernie Eccleston was still running Formula One. Imagine going, yeah, some Don from Star Wars has just bought a Formula One team. Like, that would never happen. Do you know what I mean? So
I wonder, like, from a financial point of view, I wonder what this actually means for their car as well. Because Alpine are in like a prime spot at the moment where if they had a bit more, they'd be in a really good position. And I'm no expert. I don't actually know much about investments in Formula One teams or what it really means. And obviously we don't know the actual financials, but could it be like the start of like a wider play for them to get the backing to then get the better results.
Well, it's just a $218 million cash injection for 24% of the team. Renault
pays the bills.
It helps. and I think, you know, Renault retained that like majority share. So they can sell off as long as they've got 51%, they're good. So, I think it's, they've talked about cash injection for a while. I was reading an article on the way up, actually. So Alpine are planning on rolling out, because Renault, don't, if you go to America, you don't see Renaults. They don't sell Renaults in the States. And they're planning on rolling out Alpines in the States from 2027, I think. And they still only make one car, which I think is hilarious.
But they're going to have like,
they're going to have like seven, I think, by like 27. And they're going to start rolling it out in the States as well. So I think this is as much a move to insert, you know, these storytellers, particularly, obviously, you look at, again, what Ryan and Rob have done with Wrexham, into the Alpine F1 team, as much as it is part of promoting Alpine when they eventually enter the States, because, Renault have bet big on Alpine by taking their logo off the F1 car and putting this obscure brand on it, you know? Mm. So I think they need to get that money back eventually. You know, in terms of it, I mean, I think they're aiming for like 8 billion revenue by like 2030 and to break even by 2026, which...
Yeah, from zero, because I've still never seen an Alpine on the road. So they must be at zero right
I've
now.
I've seen like a couple.
I saw one at Silverstone.
Did you?
But it was at Silverstone. So I was like, I don't think this counts, because I think it's meant to be here in a racing environment. Yeah. I've never driven down the M1. Well, I've never driven down the M1 anyway. I can't drive.
I'd like to think you've never driven down the M1.
I've never done that. Just in case the police are watching, I've never been on a road as a passenger and seen an Alpine ever.
Well, there you go. Maybe with this cash injection, and maybe, you know, if Rob and Ryan are looking to expand the esports offering at Alpine, then pay snow agency, right?
Yeah, you never know.
Bam. You'd get a bit of that 218 million. Yeah. A little cut of it for Tobin.
Yeah, I'll come and pitch something for 217. Yeah. the most incredible thing.
Just undercut them slightly.
where do you see that? Do you see the teams continuing to invest? Because it's, you know, it's... I don't know if it's a profit-making exercise for the teams. I'm assuming it isn't, but I don't know. Do you think they will continue to, you know, F1 esports seems to be growing. There seems to be good concurrent viewership as well.
Yeah, there's actually huge amounts of inflation across the board in the investment, because it's like the money that's put in always trickles down to the bottom. So the drivers, like year on year, drivers have become much better off especially in the last kind of 2 years. Mm-hmm. And so yes, that the amount's going up, but then it's becoming way more expensive too, because people are demanding, you know, more stuff. Like when I started, the rates were like a fifth of what they are now for like the best people. So yes, is the answer. The investment's going up, but the costs are too. So it kind of swings and roundabouts, really.
So Ryan Reynolds needs to invest in F1 esports.
Well, what other celebrities do you reckon? Because again, on the way down, I was thinking of, because Ryan and Rob I've never read anything that they're into motorsport, and they might not be. I don't know, right? But there's a bunch of, F1's got like a good celebrity following. Mm-hmm. I was reading a few, obviously Matthew McConaughey, he's always at Austin. Like every Grand Prix, he's there. Facts, he loves it. Leonardo DiCaprio, he loves it.
Yeah, he does actually.
He's always knocking about.
Ooh.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes, yeah. Facts.
Money. Tom Holland, big Lewis Hamilton fan.
Yeah.
Loves it.
Big Tottenham fan as well. Ugh. So I feel like he has to go for Formula One, because football is just not for him.
Yeah.
Because of the club that he supports. So just do the Formula One stuff.
Matt LeBlanc, Joey from Friends.
Yeah.
Top Gear, of course. George Lucas. He's always knocking about. George Lewis. He's not a Hollywood, is he? But he's the director.
Yeah,
he's,
no, he's the one.
Yeah,
yeah.
He counts. Yeah, he's the manager. He's the Toby.
Oh my God, you could actually make like a whole F1 team, couldn't you, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Celebrities, including like team principals, like CEO, yeah, or whatever.
Well, Brad Pitt driver.
Brad Pitt's got to be one of the drivers, realistically.
Yes.
I mean,
there were rumors, weren't there, that people thought he was going to actually drive an F1 car.
Yeah, well, ESPN, it was ESPN's fault. They tweeted out, they were like, oh yeah, lad, so Brad Pitt's going to be driving an F1 car in a practice session. Everyone was like,
is that ESPN's accent?
Yeah. They're well known for being from like East London, ESPN. And everyone was like, what are you talking about? How could he be driving in a practice session? I personally would like to see it still, even though it's probably extremely dangerous. But at Silverstone. I think he's going to be driving for, is it for a film that's coming out or?
Yeah.
It's like an F1 film, I think.
Yeah.
It's like an adapted F2 car, I think.
Yeah.
To make it look like an F1 car.
Yeah, I saw like a clip from that someone just filmed around like Brooklands at Silverstone, just this anonymous car going around. Turns out Brad Pitt's in it. So it's pretty random.
Standard.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Can you imagine filming that though? Like, how cool that would actually be.
Yeah.
Like, I hope they make it good. I really do. I'm
going to be honest. I have a feeling they're not going to make it good. I've seen some F1 films or like some racing films in my time. They're always bad, bro. They're always bad. I remember watching Daniel Ricciardo. He went on GQ and he was like reviewing racing films. And he was like, this would never happen. This would never happen. That's a load of shit. That would never happen. The racing always looks so like superimposed.
I think they've got Lewis as a co-producer on it. So hopefully he's going to exert his influence.
XNDA soundtrack.
Yeah. He knows what's going on.
Charles Leclerc's just there playing some piano music in the background at the dramatic parts.
I've got a few other celebrities. Anne Hathaway. Did you see her reaction to seeing Daniel Ricciardo at the Met Gala?
No.
She was like starstruck. She was like, oh my God, Daniel, I love you. That's my Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Sword, you're Anne Hathaway, I'm ESPN.
Yeah. A couple actually I wanted to talk about. If anyone who watches Grey's Anatomy out there, Patrick Dempsey, who's Derek Shepherd, he races. Like, he's got his own racing team.
Yeah.
Like he races in the States. And Michael Fassbender was racing 24-hour Le Mans.
Yeah, for how long? It wasn't the full 24 hours because he binned it.
He did bin it.
Yeah. When for how long is the question?
It's how many hours of Le Mans?
not a good race.
18.2 hours of Le Mans. he's been racing for ages. So I think there's a lot of celebrity. I'd like to see some of them invest. I mean, obviously, Rob and Ryan, they've earned very good money over their career. They're reinvesting it in various sporting enterprises, right? But
Who is like a celebrity outside of the list of people that we know are interested that we would want to see drive an F1 car? Because I have one in mind.
Ooh, to drive?
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, this is kind of a cop-out because we know he's into it, but Rowan Atkinson being Mr. Bean while driving an F1 car.
Mr. Bean Grand Prix would be
the flag.
or sat on the top of the F1 car with a string.
Because he's got the above halo cam, like in F1 Esports that everyone uses. Because no one uses the actual cockpit cam, do they?
Yeah, you just see
the Mr. Bean cam. Like,
it has to be a green car as well. Yeah, one little bit of black. Yep.
I don't know.
Mine personally is Shaquille O'Neal for the entertainment value, for the personality, but mostly for the build, because I would just love to see a man that tall and that big in an F1 car.
They'd have to make adjustments to the halo.
They would have to.
The car.
entire car.
This is like really tall F1.
His shoulders like would be outside of the car. Mario Kart.
Do you remember when he was on the podium at Miami, was it? And he was like not on the podium and he was still taller than Max at like the top of the podium.
Yeah. It was crazy. He was his own podium.
Oh yeah, Shaq's a good shout. Oh, who else? Who'd be a good one, Tobin?
I'd like Jeremy Clarkson actually in a race. You know, obviously recently, I'm not sure if you saw, but he gave loads of beer to Alpine.
He did.
And
that's his investment. That's Ryan Reynolds, 200 million.
Yeah.
Beer.
Jeremy Clarkson.
0-0 beer, Jeremy.
Beer on the house, yeah. But it'll be quite entertaining seeing like these TV people. Like any of the Top Gear lot, or they're not Top Gear, but you know what I'm talking about. Any of them actually taking part and see where they can, you know, they've got a lot of track time behind them.
Yeah. Hear me out. This might, to any of our non-British viewers, you might not. Joey Essex,
explain. From The Only Way is Essex.
Yeah. Really? It would just be funny to see him. I mean, to be fair, anyone would struggle if you put a F1 wheel in front of him.
Yeah, but
someone with that low IQ would be just phenomenal.
The problem would be, I think, if you went to a night race with Joey Essex, because the floodlights would just rebound off.
Oh yeah, the teeth.
The teeth.
Mm. Mm. So, bit of glare.
Bit of glare. But well, I would also love to see that. Shout out Joey.
Yeah. Well, if you're watching on YouTube, or if you can comment on audio only, then let us know what celebrities you would like to see.
Just in an effort, just whatever role, to be honest with you, team principal,
getting involved. Because
Ryan Reynolds as a team principal would actually be hilarious, by the way. Just putting that out there, I hope that somehow happens.
He'd be very passionate, wouldn't he? Very quickly, I reckon.
Yes, yeah,
if
yeah,
he gets
yeah, yeah.
invested, which he is. So it's quite
literally, good. Yeah, yeah, quite literally, quite he is invested. He literally cried after like two seasons at Wrexham. I was like, "You're, yeah. we've got you, hook, line,
yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
we've got you in this football game."
It's over.
He's cried already for like one promotion.
Well,
great stuff.
We're talking. I don't know. Talking of investments, I'm quite invested in things that Helmut Marko says, because he does like to say things.
Oh God, I can't like stop think, saying things.
Yeah, he's a bit of a loose cannon, is old Helmut, and he likes to come out with. And he was on I think it was the Inside Line podcast, which I saw it pop up on my Twitter, and I didn't listen to it. But then today, I've seen quotes that have come out of that podcast, and of course, Helmut Marko has dropped some fire because he always seems to, essentially suggesting that Christian Horner wasn't back in the signing of Nick de Vries. He wasn't. It was Helmut Marko's idea to bring de Vries in. Mm-hmm. But Helmut has now said, at the moment, it looks like he was right, admits Marko. As in, it looks like Christian was right about de Vries not being the guy, which is pretty, I mean, as a team manager,
it's quite damning.
Is that the way you would go about
Lucas, you're rubbish. Get out.
Well, you know, I don't know, the way I look at it is I like the cultures of these teams, and Red Bull is brutal, we all know that.
Mm-hmm.
And this plays to that, but I think that their brutalist nature pays off in their performance. So I think, you know, yes, Helmut's speaking a lot, but in many ways, from like looking at it and actually thinking about the effect that has on the team, at least it pushes everyone to be at their best, and it rewards people that are doing well. And if Nick de Vries at the moment's validating a really positive response from his management staff, then, you know, I guess you got to think about what culture you're actually building if that performance is encouraged.
Mm. Yeah.
That's the most politically correct way I can do
that. Well, I guess it, yeah, because I know that Red Bull, there is that sink or swim mentality. I remember I chatted to Callan O'Keefe a while back, who used to be ex-Red Bull kind of junior, and he was very much like, Red Bull, when they're looking for junior drivers, they're not looking for someone to bring in and develop. They're looking for the next best thing.
Yeah.
They're looking for, right, we'll sign you, we'll give you the resource, and then you do your thing. We're just kind of, they're very kind of hands off in that way. They're not looking to manage and grow. And obviously, look, when you get to the F1, you know, get to the F1 team, get to AlphaTauri/Red Bull, you know, all the lights and all of the pressure. I do wonder how much that Helmut realizes that, you know, in his position, when he makes comments like this, whether, you know, he's entitled to feel how he feels, right? But obviously, it is going to get picked up, because he is ultimately the guy who seems to be just as, if not the most, in control of who sits in that AlphaTauri in particular.
Yeah.
So I just wonder if he realizes that.
I think he does. I think he knows when he says this sort of stuff that it's... He's saying it for a reason, and his way, I think.
But what's the reason?
People,
that's what I mean.
But I think his way of motivating people is to just.
Do you
be
think that's his idea? Because it doesn't feel very. I don't know.
I mean,
that's a stretch.
There's different people that motivate in different ways.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't think he would say it if he thought, well, yeah, I'm just going to fuck up the base here and just say what I like and whatever. I think there has to be some element of like, I want to try and push Nick by basically saying something derogatory about him. To improve his performance,
yeah,
so that he knows if he doesn't improve, he's out of here.
Whole idea is like, oh, I'm gonna like prove you wrong, whatever. When you've managed different drivers, obviously, is it on you to understand how, because if you give every driver the same approach, certain drivers' personality is going to respond better or worse. So is it on you to understand how to get the best out of these drivers?
Yeah, massively. But where you don't have to be different is that underlying, you know, in Formula One, it's obvious, but when you actually think about it, Nick de Vries has a long line of people. If you were to actually look at how many people were stood behind Nick de Vries wanting his seat,
mm-hmm.
there's loads of people. And I think that creates natural pressure. And because ultimately every driver there is replaceable. And I think it's really important, especially like when you're bringing up the young breed, because it's a business, they have to remember that they're replaceable, as harsh as that is, because otherwise there's going to be better people that don't get anything at all. And no one's ever speaking about them because no one knows about them.
Yeah.
So it's like the way I think is, there's, you know, it's a, they're at the top of their game, but to be at the top of their game, they need to like really earn it, because they're still going to be well off in F2, but to be in F1 or whatever, you know, it's just the harsh reality of being at the top of something massive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Lawrence Barreto was reporting earlier in the week that Ricciardo is open to an AlphaTauri move, and the Red Bull family
are open to it as well.
Yeah. To it as well, which combined with these comments from Helmut,
it's not looking good, Brev.
I mean, do we think mid-season, would that happen mid-season? I think De Vries, I think he does need to, I could see a swap happening mid-season. I really could.
Like after the summer break.
If there's not a up to, what is it? Belgium's the last race before the summer break,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what we've got. Austria, Silverstone, Hungary. Yeah, there's four more races. I think De Vries needs a good four races. If he
doesn't beat Yuki Tsunoda once in those,
or at least show performance, like he was, I think he was 20 seconds off of Yuki before Yuki had his issues in Canada.
Yeah,
like it's.
Yeah, but he still went off anyway with Magnussen, didn't he?
Mm.
In Canada.
Oh God, yeah.
That was set eight driving.
That was yeah,
from everyone involved during that. So.
Does it make you miss the driving at all, Tobin, watching the F1 and also managing these drivers?
Yeah, it does actually. It's really fun. It's really fun. But back to what you were saying though, at least Nyck de Vries, by the way, it could be worse, because if you think about what happened to Daniel Kvyat back in the day, at least he's unlikely anyway to lose both his drive and his girlfriend. With whatever happens, you have to be careful.
That is true. Yeah. That is a fact.
Moving mad at it.
Yeah. I think at the very least, yes, he's probably like hopefully safe in that regard.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's just a situation of the seat's gone, bro. But at least, you know.
Yeah, I could definitely see a mid
strong and stable.
I could see a mid season quick, because like, what is there to lose from putting in Daniel for the second half of the season?
What I am gonna say though, that Red Bull needs to be careful of,
what
is Nyck de Vries gonna be as effective on TikTok as Daniel Ricciardo is right now? Ooh. You don't want the numbers to plummet. You know, you don't want the TikTok likes to go down drastically. I think that's something they've got to balance out and bear in mind.
Yeah.
Because they're going to lose a lot with Daniel Ricciardo, and I don't think they're going to gain it back with De Vries on a social platform.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I mean, audience is your number one asset, right?
So, precisely.
And Daniel's actually, he's reeling that in.
Yeah, he is. So for me, I'd just leave it how it is.
Tobin, some of these drivers that you're managing, these esports drivers, right? they're obviously coming from, you know, I think when you're racing on a simulator, you get really good. It can be quite isolating, right? You spend a lot of time on your own racing, and then you get to the top level and all of a sudden there's this exposure and this pressure and working like racing for an F1 team. How do you manage that side for the drivers? Because I imagine some take to it, you know, much easier to the pressure and the expectation and the eyeballs and the following than others.
Well, I think you're right. First of all, like it is a hugely, like the hours that you have to put in to be good, because you know, the margins that you have to work to when you're a professional esports driver is like just stupid. Like it's like thousandths of a second are the difference between being good and being non-existent. But what I've found is when you're at the top, you know, when you're like the best in the world, when you're a Lucas Blakely or whatever, he and others at that quality are so driven to being at that quality that they recognize the fact that this is like their focus, and they recognize that they are going to have to sacrifice certain elements of their lifestyle outside of that to nail it. And they as individuals, I feel like at that point, they realize it and they manage it quite well in themselves. So as a manager, it's just like, you know, you just check in, just make sure that they're okay, because it is tough. Those that don't want to do that and they don't want to like dedicate all hours and every last bit of energy, they don't make it, so they don't have that problem because they don't, you know, they just won't make it if they don't do it.
How do you balance, like, because it it definitely can be unhealthy. Like it in terms of like the amount of hours that people have to put in, like when you almost like a duty of care, do you, like how, cause you've done it. The thing is you've been there, you've done that. You've put the hours in, you were a top tier driver yourself. So how do you reflect on that now? And how do you think, cause you don't want to get to the stage that, you know, in another 10 years when this industry, the esports industry is even bigger and there's more people participating, there's just this influx of everyone's doing 12-hour days, no rest, not like, because I think people will, because I think a lot of the time it's like, I have to put more hours in because the next person's putting more hours in and then I'm going to put an extra half hour in and then they put the extra half hour. And it can get, I can imagine it can get quite unhealthy quite quickly.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's just about recognizing it really. And then also people like, as with any skill, forget about looking at esports specifically, but I'm a firm believer here that if you spend 12 hours a day on something that you're trying to learn, like 8 of them or maybe 6 of them are wasted, because I don't know if I played like, you know, ping pong for 12 hours a day, I think I'd get better for like 6 and then afterwards I'd just be like
you got to recognize that pattern.
And it's the same game.
Night falls off.
It's just like I think it's the same with gaming. So it's like, just make sure people recognize, you know, when they're overcommitting, and just like, you're right, there's a threat there, but it's just, you have to be smart, you have to manage it and look after yourself and make sure that if you're going to be putting in long hours, you know, go do something else. It's so important. And if you're not, you're wasting your time and you're doing it wrong. So
play some ping pong.
That's
not for 12 hours.
Yeah, that ping pong table with Veloce got a lot of use, to be fair.
It did. That got 12 hours of use every day.
Easy. Something else I wanted to talk about as well. So reports, and we've talked about, you know, a new team coming in was Cadillac Andretti.
Yeah.
There's been lots of names rumoured, which that's gone a bit quiet now, hasn't it, actually? We haven't really heard much from Cadillac Andretti.
Yeah, true.
It's their thing. But there's a new name that's entered the fray. High Tech Grand Prix, which you might know
from the F2 team.
F3, F4 as well. British team wants to come in, has got investment from the richest man in Kazakhstan. So,
that's a great person to have.
Yeah. Vladimir Kim. And so, yeah, I mean, listen, I think High Tech, they're an independent team in the same way you think of like a Pramer or a Carlin. So they don't have that big manufacturer backing. I guess that's the, you know, if Andretti as an independent privateer team are still struggling to get in with the backing of GM and Cadillac, then High Tech with the backing of an individual billionaire seems like, I don't think that's going to get across the line, I'll be honest.
Probably not in the current form of applications, but I don't know, because the FIA are trying to push it, aren't they? They're really trying to push like an extra, what, 2 teams? It's not 3 teams.
Yeah, I think the 3? FIA would like 2. Would
yeah,
like
2. More. So they're trying to push 2 more teams. Obviously, F1 and the current F1 teams don't want it for obvious reasons, because they want a bigger split of the pie or whatever. I think if it does get pushed, I think there's a chance, but again, like, what are High Tech going to bring in terms of like, what engine supplier they're going to go with, this and that? Obviously, it reminds me a bit of Manor, because Manor were obviously quite a big team in terms of like the junior categories. They had like British F3 teams that were really popular and stuff and did well. High Tech are kind of like a similar background, I guess, to want to get into F1. But yeah, I think if Cadillac and Andretti are struggling to get people to recognize them and recognize their validity and a genuine reason for them to be in F1, High Tech are going to struggle more to me, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I just think, that the politics of it are going to get in the way. Like, because it feels like the teams are annoyingly resistant, and I kind of get why the teams are resistant, because they need to take care of themselves. But I do think, you know, the sport would be in a stronger place with, particularly with an Andretti Cadillac entry.
Yeah, I mean, and as well, I'm just throwing this out there, but perhaps Formula One, being a business, will be waiting for names that are coming in that really like scream of to the mass market of how big these entries are.
Yeah.
You know, someone like Audi does that, you know.
They fucking loved the F1 when Audi came along.
Yeah, I mean,
laptop.
Yeah, so in this example with an F2, F3, F4 team, that's like, motorsport fans know who they are, but but the mass market maybe don't. Maybe low key, they're like, let's wait for a big car manufacturer to come in.
The one thing I will say is though, actually, that might even work slightly, maybe slightly in their advantage of like big F1 teams. Look at like Andretti as a big name and Cadillac as a big and GM as big companies and go, that could be a threat. They might look at high tech and go, we're going to be rolling towards the back. Might not be as big of a threat. Like Mercedes might be like, ah, oh, it's car, man. That's another engine. That's another team we can do engine suppliers with.
Yeah. Look, I guess, I think...
No offense to high tech, but...
No, look, I mean...
It's probably true. Like, they probably would be towards the back, certainly at the start anyway.
You would think so. And you don't want the risk of another, you know, Manor, Virgin, Marussia, those kind of facts, teams that were just... That they offered nothing. They were at the back. They were, you know, you just see a few sponsors occasionally on the screen.
That's harsh of manner.
They wouldn't. It's true though.
Like, I love them.
It's yeah, but like they didn't bring anything to the sport.
They brought Pascal Wehrlein.
They didn't. They did, and Esteban Ocon. They actually he shot, didn't they? So I think that yeah, I struggle to get. I mean, there's a few other bids knocking about. I think the Cadillac Andretti one is the most viable for sure. But I mean, they're talking about raising that anti-dilution fee from 200 million to 600 million. The money's getting
this politics shit. But
the money's getting mad. I mean, this Alpine deal values Alpine at 900 million, which I mean that puts the top teams clear of a billion now.
It's not bad, is it?
It's not bad. It's all right, funds. Yeah, it's all right. Yeah,
thinking about that, I quite want 24% of Alpine now. Yeah, yeah, I should have done something.
Yeah, maybe you should have crowdfunded, got a few dragons, gone on Dragon's Den, maybe. Yeah.
Right, guys, I've got an F1 team.
Hey, Stephen, can you lend me?
£218 million. To be fair, though, if they're only worth a billion, still only a quarter of what this set's worth. So.
True. Yeah, you've got the numbers like we have.
You know what I'm saying?
The numbers that we have.
Now, honestly, it comes back to these F1 teams having too much power.
Yeah.
Realistically, yeah. That is the only blockage here. It's not like F1 as a sport is going, oh man, yeah, now we don't need any more teams than 10. Like anyone outside of the teams themselves wants two extra teams, including the FIA, but the teams don't, so we're not going to get it. Yeah. And that to me is just like, shit.
Yeah. It is, because I think it's...
Especially if they are going to be teams that can offer something. Because Cadillac Andretti would definitely offer something. They wouldn't just be rocking back the whole time.
I mean, I'm sure 9 out of 10 fans, if you ask, would you like 12 teams on the grid? Mm. I think the vast majority would say yes. Like
there's not enough seats for good drivers.
It's like four more seats.
The ratio of seats to good F1 worthy drivers is not... higher,
and I think as the standard of drivers keeps increasing and more drivers coming through who will be able to hone their craft, not just karting, but racing on the sim, and that becomes a more valid, I think, you know, Max and Lando, I think part of what makes them so great is their experience on a simulator, because they've got, you know, those skills you keep sharp and you develop. I mean, Max's restarts, for example, like, are so good. And I'm pretty sure he's been quoted saying, like, you know, he practices these on the sim, because that's a strategic thing, isn't it?
Yeah, on that, I've raced with Max on iRacing, and his restart specifically, because I made a video about it, and because he was
you did,
yeah, he was
you did. I remember that.
Yeah, he was absolutely destroying me, like destroying me. And bear in mind, this is like top bit of iRacing, a really really good simulator. Everyone else, like all the people, all the sim racers, you know, they were no problem. But Max, like, genuinely, he's on another world. And what people don't necessarily realize about him and his gaming, his sim racing, is he really is like one of the best drivers in the world at iRacing, and he's driving on it constantly.
Yeah.
You know, it's madness. He doesn't stop. Like, he really doesn't stop.
Will you just like go on iRacing and you'll just...
Because you will see it.
You'll just see him, his little name.
Yeah, if you're in like the top split on iRacing and you are consistently going on, I would say you're a very like high likelihood that Max would just pop in. Like if you go on Twitch and you click on an iRacing stream and look at like the top drivers, you never know. It like often I will pop on and it will just be like, oh, there's Max again. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh,
well, we finished in second again this time.
Yeah,
so like, he was just battering everyone.
Yeah, he's really fast.
I mean, it is like the least surprising thing, realistically, as Max Verstappen. But
you know, if you look at the other F1 drivers or other racing drivers in general, they're like everyone else is very good, but Max for some reason is like just beating everyone. Like yeah. It's just silly. It's I have so much respect for him because he does work so hard, and you can see it, like especially when you look at the Sims and how much he's doing.
I feel like when I went to Redline last year and had a chat with Atsa who runs Redline, and he was saying, you know, he considers Max top three in the world in terms of on the Sim. So, because what do you think, you know, from your perspective, what makes Max so good? I mean, again, you can speak from the Sim point of view. So what when you look at the way he drives, when you race against him and all that, like what's the difference that makes him so good? Is it just the ability to be super consistent, or is he getting lap times that no one else can touch?
It's like... I'm going to sound like I'm clueless with my response, but it's actually very simple. It's just like everything is perfect. Mm. Like everything, like from my experiencing, you know, I, for a bit of context, to get to Max's pace, I was like on it like for days, like just sweating. Cause I don't really play iRacing, but I was practicing so hard. And then I came on, he's there. I don't even think he practiced that much, to be honest. He just got on and his restart's perfect. Lap one, perfect. Qualifying, no mistakes, perfect. And it's just like, for God's sake, like, just make a mistake.
Be human.
Yeah. And like everyone else, all the other really fast people, because genuinely, like, this is like the top of sim racing. Everyone else is extremely good, but they might go slightly wide on one corner in four laps. And then suddenly you can gain a little bit. But Max, he just, you know, it just does. It's really annoying. Yeah. So fair play. Fair play.
Really annoying.
It's really annoying when you're racing against him, I suppose. Yeah. I guess you get a little bit of an insight of how Pierre Gasly, Alex Albon, Checo feel, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because when from the outside looking in, you think, oh, you know, just brake a bit later. You know, just turn in.
Just go faster.
We all think it though, don't we? We're like, you know, it doesn't look like Perez is very good because he's being outpaced consistently. It's like, no, like Max is just, he's not human. It's unfair. It's like if he had cheat codes like in his car, he's like, you know, pressing buttons underneath to unlock a bit of horsepower, I'd believe it.
Yeah.
But it's not, he's just really good.
It's mad. Have you encountered any other drivers on the sim who are at that level as well, right? You must have, like the ones that are an equivalent level of perfection, at least on the sim.
Well, in terms of drivers, like Formula One drivers, not to Max's level, but really impressive people are 2 years ago during lockdown, I did some sim racing with Jenson Button, and I had the pleasure of sharing a car with him in a couple of like charity races, like 12-hour races. And he had come in with very little experience. And I, you know, in the back of my head, I was a bit like, you know, Jenson, he's a legend, he's rapid, but, you know, new to sim racing, is he actually going to be good?
This is my forte. This is my swamp.
My swamp, you know. But he was quite smart. He recognized that sim racing was different and surrounded himself with like good people, including like James Baldwin, myself. And he learned and he got really, really, really fast. Really fast. Mm. Very quickly. And so, you know, obviously Lando, George, Charles, they all do it as well. But from my experience, it's like these F1 drivers, they just have like an ability to come in and they might be like, they'll be decent, but not incredible. But then it's what they do is like they learn really fast.
Yeah.
And I expect that's probably what Max has done. He just, and I think I heard him say in an interview that the reason he does sim racing is because it trains his brain to like, he goes on and instead of being in an F1 car, he's in a GT car, which is completely different.
Yeah, he never races F1 cars, does he?
Never. Because to be honest, F1, like there's not really an accurate sim online. Yeah, yeah. So he gets on, drives something completely different. His brain rewires, but then he's still like perfect. So he's like, nice, I can do that. And then he'll drive an
just
LMP1.
So adaptable, yeah.
Yeah, he'll drive an LMP1 car. Nice. Yeah. Perfect. You know, it's like, okay, mate.
Do you reckon this is part of the reason why he's talked about like leaving F1 in 28 and going and doing other stuff? Because he's clearly interested in motorsport outside of Formula One.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even karting for him, you know, obviously he's an extremely accomplished karter. That's completely different. Like, karting is nothing like F1. Mm. So, yeah, if he was to do anything, I probably back him, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I have 2CV Cup in 2027. Yeah. I'm calling it here. Calling it
driving around.
Demolition derby. He's just like,
perfect. He's just doing like 10-second lap times. Everyone else is like demolishing each other.
He'd do the Isle of Man TT, I reckon.
Sure he'd be allowed, but yeah.
No. Well, yeah, because they didn't let him do this. It's in Nordschleife. There's a Red Bull thing that Yuki's doing, and I think Checo might be doing. No, Vettel's doing, sorry.
Yeah.
Well, but Max isn't allowed, which is a bit weird. Yuki, you can go, but not you, Max. You stay. You stay in the...
I'd actually be fuming if I
was Yuki.
In
the cotton wall.
Yeah, stay on the leash.
Yeah.
The F1.
Yeah. He's not allowed to do it, bless him. I think Max would have been gutted. He'd love to have done that, I reckon. One other thing I want to talk about as well is tyres, Tobin. Tobin tyres.
Them round things.
Them round rubbery things. Pirelli have supplied F1 since 2012, am I right in saying that? I think. I can't remember. It was Bridgestone before. No, it was Michelin, but I can't remember. Yeah, but then I think, and then Michelin buggered off, so it was just Bridgestone. And then Pirelli took over, and now there's talk of potentially Bridgestone coming back. Pirelli versus Bridgestone. Fight.
I think there should be like five. This is my hot take. I think there should be like five different tyre suppliers. Just all out mass brawl.
I think it should be, you know, the ones, the cheap ones you get Quick Fit.
Facts.
Yeah, budget tyres. Like, you know, £20, they fall off on after two laps, but they're rapid.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's all you need.
OT every lap.
Yeah, 17 pit stops per race.
Yeah. It's an interesting question, actually. I have a view that having too many might not solve anything, because they'll just pick the best one or the best combo. And then it's just like, it's like a bit of a joke, because there's like, say there's like 100 tires to choose from, but then only two are ever picked. So in some ways I think homologating it, and then, you know, just being able to really keep people on the same wavelength, and that is probably more simple.
It's another variable, isn't it, that could potentially...
I just missed the Michelin man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, true.
That's true. Actually, scrap what I just said. Yeah.
No, it's fine. That's what I miss. I just missed that branding, to be honest with you, mate. I just missed the Michelin man.
Yeah, maybe
scrap
one day.
Pirelli.
I just... You know what, like... I think the understanding from what I've read is that a lot of drivers don't believe that Pirelli can make the right tyre, but Pirelli are like, well, we're just making what you're telling us to make. So there's this kind of conflict there.
Yeah.
Not so much recently. I mean, what was it? Was it 2021 when Max's tyre blew out, Stroll's tyre blew out. At Baku,
yeah,
there was a few races.
Silverstone was
2020
one as well. Yeah,
the delamination of everyone's tires. So there's been Pirelli have been in the good books more recently, but there have also been in the not too distant past, a few issues. I mean, it would be cool to see another brand, I guess, but also I think Pirelli are quite a... I mean, I miss them. They're not in the Interland shirt anymore.
Yeah,
I'm most excited about.
That is sad.
I mean, to be honest, I don't. His tires don't really care. I don't really care, but I don't want another tyre war. I guess that's the question, because I think that just adds... The sport is starting to converge, I do believe that, from top to bottom. Maybe Red Bull are ahead at the top, but the top to bottom is converging. If you add multiple different tyre manufacturers, then that just...
Blow things.
That could just fuck it all up
again.
Could make things amazing, but it also could fuck it up, so I'd rather just stick with, you know... But if you had to pick Bridgestone Pirelli, what are you saying?
Yokohama.
Ooh, outside shout.
Yeah,
like that.
Let's go Continental with it.
Okay.
That's a brand that does tyres as well, Continental.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Well, Bridgestone's Japanese as well as Yokohama.
Oh, okay.
Both Japanese.
Is Michelin's
French? Michelin's
French.
Surely,
yeah.
Yeah, Continental's German.
Yeah, no, Michelin. I just the big man. No, pause.
Tobin, any preference as a racer yourself?
Yeah, probably a Quick Fit subscription.
Nice.
Halfords Auto Center.
McLaren X Halfords. There you go. Papaya.
The branding's there.
Yeah,
The branding is there.
Sorted.
There you go, Zach.
Yeah, ultimately, I just don't have multiple tyre manufacturers, please, F1. That's just too much shenanigans.
Yeah. Keep it simple.
Just put cycling tyres. Put bicycle tyres on them and see what happens.
Right, Austrian Grand Prix this weekend, boys. Predictions, thoughts, feelings. Haas are always quick around Austria for some reason.
Yep. Hülkenberg, Magnussen, 1-2.
I mean, Holt's got it in his locker.
You know what I will say? Max Verstappen has bad mechanical luck in Austria. Or Styria or wherever. You know what it's been called in the past. So there might be, you know, little Red Bull gremlins there, the Red Bull ring. But like, if we're taking that out of account, then if we're going to be realistic here, Max Verstappen is going to win the race. I hate to break it to everyone.
I think you might be right.
I think it's a pretty safe bet.
I believe you would say
I'm pushing the boat out there with that one, but
I
think...
This is mad.
Yeah.
Just
bear with me, you'll see. Yeah.
What about Lando? Austria, Lando.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this
good combination.
I know, you know, this year, least likely year for him in terms of
success. There is an upgrade coming, I believe, for Austria.
Well, genuinely, then maybe this is it because he's rapid there. It has been time.
I think this is another step of a multi-step plan.
But yeah, I was going to say, because when we had Pete and Mahad on, they were like, oh yeah, B-spec guard. And it was meant to be Baku originally. I remember them saying
it was meant
to be Baku, and then Baku came and there, it was not a B-spec. It was the A-spec car.
Yeah, because Andrea Stella's been like quite scathed in terms of like, we're pretty much changing the whole car.
Yeah. But they're not. No,
but then James Key's gone to Sauber. So at least Seidel believed in Key, but Stella didn't believe in Key because it's like, we're changing the whole fucking thing.
Wasn't able to unlock him.
No.
I didn't get it immediately.
Oh,
I'm an idiot.
Amazing stuff.
You are. That was good fun, though. let's wrap it on that note. Thank you, everyone, for watching. Thank you, everyone, for listening wherever you are in the world. And thank you very much, Tobin Lee of Pace Note Agency. Go give him a follow on. Are you on Twitter?
Yeah,
everyone?
Twitter, Instagram. I'm all over. So you can just look out for it.
Tobin Lee.
Tobin
inspiring. The next generation of esports minds.
Indeed.
The manager.
The manager. I like
the manager.
The manager.
That sounds like a documentary. Like it when does. I'm like really old.
Yeah.
I've been there and I'm like, I've seen that.
I've been
esports
there.
It's been around for like 70 years.
Yeah, people,
I was there.
Yeah.
People will hope to see Alex Ferguson and they'll be like, who's this guy?
where else can they find us, Niren? What other platforms can people find us on?
Well, obviously, if you're watching on YouTube, feel free to give us a like and, of course, subscribe if you're not already. If you're listening on audio-only platforms, then give us a five-star rating on old Spotify or wherever you happen to be watching, listening in. In terms of other platforms, they can also find us on this week. You can find us on the back of the Michelin Man.
It's always on the back of something.
No, there's a QR code. There's a QR code on the Michelin Man. If you scan it, it will take you through to Michelin.
Is it in one of the folds of the Michelin Man?
Yeah, it is. So you've got to delve a little bit.
Okay.
It's the fourth one down. You've got to just open it up and then the QR code, scan that.
Love that.
It's there. And also, if you boot up your PlayStation 1 and say the words last lap three times in front of it, and then put the memory card in the wrong way around, it'll come up with the show. So you can watch us there as well.
Just, if you're going to go search for the Michelin Man, though, make sure it is the Michelin Man.
Yes, yeah, you're not, yeah, just, not just another man. Delving.
That could be very awkward if you're not careful. Make sure you wait for a trade expo.
Yes.
Because, you're not really seeing Michelin Man outside of a trade expo.
In the wild.
Exactly. Thanks again, everyone. Cheers for watching, listening, giving your support to us. And we'll see you on Sunday.
Indeed.
The Austrian Grand Prix. I'm going on Friday and Saturday, but I'm flying back Sunday morning. So
okay, so we'll see you there.
Fingers crossed the airliner doesn't let me down.
Yeah. Watch out for Tomo on TV at the Austrian Grand Prix. He'll be there.
Tomo on TV.
Waving.
Yeah, I'll be waving in the background. Goodbye, everyone. Bye, bye, bye.
Bye, yeah.
Bye, bye, bye.